Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Before we begin our shiur, it is still appropriate for us to remind you to acquire your volume of the Sefer, the book of illustrations called Sichas Chulin by Amitai Ben David. This is very important in anticipation of upcoming sugyas in Maseches Chulin that necessitate, or that whose understanding is made much easier with this wonderful piece of work. Once again, the Sefer's name is Sichas Chulin, authored by Amitai Ben David. Today's Gemara on Daf Vov will begin 4 lines from the top. In effect, we're in the middle of a discussion. The discussion concerns the fact that Rabbi Gamliel and his Beis Din issued a prohibition of benefiting from from eating of the shechita, the slaughtering done by a kusi. We saw a Gemara on Daf Hei Omid Beis featuring Rav Yankov Bar Idi, who mentioned this point, and in our discussion we concluded that the prohibition of eating from the slaughtering of a kusi is extended even under circumstances when the kusi is being supervised. The Gemara here, 4 lines from the top, asks, Umay taimo gozru behu rabbonan. Why did the rabbonan issue such a prohibition? It might be worth noting that as far as the Mishnah is concerned on Daf Beis Omid Aleph, according to Abaye's interpretation of the Mishnah, a kusi's slaughtering would have been okay had a Jew been supervising it. However, comes along at a later point in time, Rabbi Gamliel and Beis Dino, Rabbi Gamliel and his assembly and his court, and they voted to prohibit the Shechitas Kusi under all circumstances. The issue that interests us now is why was that? The Gemara, as we go on, will be accompanied by a geometric form, the diamond shape. In this case, we have an explanation in the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. Mivneh being structure. In our Gemara marking system, we attempt to provide structural notes as well as topic headings that we call no say. Here under our Mivneh heading, we have written two shlichuyos lebei kusoi, two stories involving people sent to kusi communities, lahavi mehem yayin, to bring back from there some wine, the ne'etzru, and they were halted. In other words, the missions to get wine from the kusis was stopped. In addition to the slaughtering done by the kusi, we will find in the upcoming Gemaras that their wine is also questionable, problematic. We know in general that when it comes to the realm of idol worship, if wine is poured in front of an idol as a form of service to that idol, the wine is called yayin nesech, and that's prohibited. People that are associated with idolatry, therefore, will create problems with regard to their wine as far as a Jew benefiting from their wine. So we just raised the question of why was a prohibition issued concerning the kusi and their slaughtering? We've mentioned in previous shurim already that the kusi were a people that came to join the Jewish people under questionable circumstances. In other words, their conversion is suspect. Why then was their slaughtering ruled prohibited? So the Gemara now answers, Ki hod Reb Shimon Elazar, and you'll notice before we learn the Gemara, there's a long answer marking that accompanies this. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see an encircled letter Tuf with a descending vertical dashed line. That indicates that all the lines that are opposite this this marking constitute the answer. So we have read, Ki hod Reb Shimon ben Elazar Shadre Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir sent. Shadre means sent him. Sent Reb Shimon ben Elazar la'asuye chamra, to bring wine. Chamra is wine. Mibei kusoi, from a kusi community. Ashkeche hahu sabo, the emissary here, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, met up with an old man, Amale, and the old man cited a pasuk to him and said, V'samto sakin bilo echo imbal nefesh ato. This pasuk was cited as a hint, indicating to him that that you ought to stop in your way, desist from your mission. Halach Reb Shimon Elazar v'siper dvorim lifnei Rabbi Meir. Reb Shimon Elazar told this over to Rabbi Meir, v'gozar alehem, and Rabbi Meir issued a prohibition. My time off. Why did Rabbi Meir prohibit their wine? Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, demus yona motzu lahan barosh hargrizim shahoyu oivdin oisa. Demus yona is an image of a dove. A dove image was found on the top of the of Mount Gerizim that the Kusis were worshipping. Now we have to note that the majority of the Kusis, rove of the Kusim, were not on Har Gerizim. However, this was enough evidence to Rabbi Meir that they are, that the Kusis are problematic, that they're practicing idol worship. Rabbi Meir Litame, Rabbi Meir, in issuing his across-the-board prohibition against Kusi wine, is consistent with his general approach to halacha, dechayish lemiuta. He takes into consideration the minority. In other words, Rabbi Meir, in ruling on legal matters, allows the minority to cast light or to influence the legal outcome. The Goza Ruba Otu Miuta, and he issued a ruling prohibiting the wine of all of the Kusim, Ruba literally the majority, but in this case it means the rest of the Kusim, Otu Miuta, in anticipation of this minority that were found worshipping the dove image. The Rabbon Gamliel Beis Dino Nami Rabbi Meir Sviro Lehu Rabbi Gamliel, and his Beis Din with regard to the slaughtering of the Kusim figure like Rabbi Meir, and therefore they were going to view the slaughtering of the Kusim as if it were an idol worshipper's act of slaughtering, and when it comes to idol worshipping, idol worshippers slaughtering, that slaughtering is unfit. As you can see, we have in our markings a bracketed section. The Gemara, after this bracketed section, will have another incident involving someone sent to a Kusi community to get wine. And the Gemara will ask, as far as the second incident, which takes place later in time, how could it be when it was already ruled that the Kusi wine is forbidden? In the brackets, the Gemara will be discussing the simple meaning of the pasuk that was cited in Mishlei as in the previous incident as a hint not to continue on the trip. The Gemara wants to know, and let's read the Gemara now in the brackets, Pashte dekra b'maik siv. What is the poshut, the simple meaning of the pasuk? Simple meaning, we're not talking about the translation, but rather the simple interpretation of the pasuk to what is the pasuk addressing. The answer is B'talmid Hayoshev Lifnei Rabo. It's describing the situation of someone learning from his teacher, from his master. The Toni Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya teaches the following. Ki seishet vilchom es Moshel bin tovin es asher lefonecha v'samto sakin b'lo'echa im baal nefesh ato. That's the entire pasuk from Mishlei. Not only the entire pasuk, but you have a quote here from the pasuk just before it, pasuk Aleph, and the pasuk v'samto sakin b'lo'echa was pasuk Beis. So you have that which preceded the pasuk that we're asking about, and the pasuk itself. What is it talking about? So the Gemara explains. This is part of Rabbi Chiya's teaching. Im yodea talmid barabo shiyodea lahachsilotam. If a talmid knows that his teacher, that his rabbi, can answer his questions. This, we should point out, is alluded to in Pasuk Aleph, where it says, Kiseshev Lulchoim, when you've sat to wage war. And we're talking about the war in Torah, the battle for understanding. So, if you are a student and seated in front of your teacher and know that he has the capacity to answer your questions, bin was a word in the pasuk, and it means ask. Ask your questions. V'im lav, that means, and if he is not capable of answering your questions, then tovin es asher lefonecha v'samto sakin bloecha. That means you will attempt to understand things on your own, and restrain yourself from asking him, because he doesn't know how to answer. If he is that kind of person that's not sufficiently knowledgeable, don't embarrass him and restrain yourself from asking. Im bal nefesh ato, if, however, you are someone that can't restrain yourself and have such an intense desire to achieve understanding immediately and have to know the actual answer, and you don't have the option of asking this Rav, so pro shemenu, so depart from him, seek another address for asking your questions. At this point, the bracketed section closes with this, as we said, had contained a simple understanding or an explanation of the pasuk from Mishlei, Perek Chof Gimel Pasuk Beis. Now the Gemara goes back to stories involving trying to acquire wine from Kusi communities. Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef Shadrei Rabbi Avohu Lasuya Chamro Mibei Kusoi. This is a much later incident historically than the first incident, which involved Tanoim, which involved Rabbi Meir sending Rabbi Shimon ben Elozar. Here you have Amoroyim, where Rabbi Avo is sending Rabbi Yitzchok ben Yosef to a Kusi community to bring wine. With our markings, we've used a diagonal dashed line under the expression Lasui Chamri Bekusoi, as we did earlier, to show how these two incidents are the same in their original purpose. Ashkechehu Sabo, Rabbi Yitzchok, the emissary, met up with an old man, Omale, and he said, Les kan shomrei Torah. The old man said, there are no Torah observers over here. Holach Rabbi Yitzchok v'siper dvorim lifnei Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Yitzchok reported this to Rabbi Avo, v'holach Rabbi Avo v'siper dvorim lifnei Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. And Rabbi Avo himself went and reported that to these Rabbonim, Rabami and Ravasi, v'lo zozu misham ad she'asom ovdei kechovim gemurim, and they didn't leave their position until they declared them total idol worshippers. This declaration of the Kusim being considered like complete idol worshippers, lemai, regarding what area of halacha? E lishchita v'yayin nesech, if with regard to prohibiting their slaughtering and their wine, mehasam gazru behu rabbanon, they were already prohibited. These areas were already prohibited. The issue of the wine was prohibited from the incident involving Rabbi Meir sending Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The issue of their slaughtering, that was prohibited from Rabbi Gamliel Ubeis Dino. So what is the purpose of this declaration that they are considered Goyim Gemurim, or total idol worshippers? The Gemara answers, Inhu Gozur Velo Kiblu Minayu. Those earlier generations, namely Rabbi Meir's ruling and Rabbi Gamliel Ubeis Dino's ruling, were prohibitions that were issued, however, not because they were any lesser than these later rabbinic figures, but rather their generation did not accept those prohibitions. The rabbis may have issued the prohibitions, but they never took hold. Rashi explains the reason for it not taking hold, because at that time in history, the community, the Jewish population, had so much to do with the Kusi that by banning their shechita and their wine, it would have caused much economic difficulty for them. Osu Rabbi Ami Ravasi came along, Rabbi Ami and Ravasi, who were quite a few years later. At this point in history, the Jewish connection with the Kusis was much, much less prevalent. And therefore, Gazru V'Kiblu Minayu, they issued the same ruling of prohibition, and it took hold, it was accepted. My ovdei kochavim gemurim. What is meant by that expression? You can see that we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can parallel this with where we saw it originally, namely a mere two lines earlier. Where the Gemara is asking here, what is intended by this expression, namely that they were declared as full-fledged idol worshippers? The answer to this is that this declaration, or this consideration or classification, has a legal nafgamina in the case of Hilchus Erevin. Before going on in the Gemara, we just by way of introduction, when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, and you have a jointly held area, a jointly held area, an example would be a courtyard onto which a number of homes open up. If you have a courtyard surrounded by homes, apartments, the courtyard on Shabbos is a place that if nothing is done by way of Eruv Chatzerus, it would be prohibited to carry from the houses into the courtyard, and from the courtyard it would be prohibited to carry items into the houses. This is a rabbinic ruling because of the similarity in nature between a courtyard that's jointly owned to a Rishus Harabim, which is an area occupied or used by the public. In order to make an allowance for carrying from private homes into this jointly held courtyard, an Eruv Chatzeros is prepared. That's a situation where food is set aside on behalf of all of the inhabitants of that courtyard and placed in one of the homes, creating a sense of joint of everyone being together in that house, and that the courtyard therefore is considered shayach, we'll say, to one domain, one ownership. The fact that they join together makes them into a singular type ownership. The areas of Erevin are much more involved than our superficial presentation right now, but for our purposes that should suffice by way of general introduction. Now the issue comes up, what happens if in the courtyard you have a Jew that forgot to contribute to this jointly held box of food? The food, as we alluded to before, was set aside on behalf of all of the people in the courtyard. That involved a situation where everyone would contribute a portion of food, and it was then placed in one house. Let's say one of the residents forgot to contribute. In such a case, he can remove himself, we'll say verbally, he can remove himself by declaring his his possession or his part in the chotzer as being botel. He is mevatel his rishus, or he is voiding his ownership on behalf of all of the rest. So in effect, he is legally removing himself from there. What happens if you have a Gentile resident in the chotzer? In such a case, a Gentile owner of a house opens to the chotzer. It is not sufficient for him to mevatel his rishus, to simply abandon or void his holding. You have to rent from him his ownership, his apartment, and his portion in the chotzer. That's called ach yiskor mekoma. As far as the kusi is concerned, let us say you have a kusi member of the chotzer. By virtue of the fact that we've now classified the kusi as an ove kechavim gomor, this will make it such that if he is a member of the chotzer, he will impose a problem on the chotzer until you rent from him his holding over there. The Gemara now explains. We asked what is meant by, or what legal ramification does Ovdei Kechavim Gemurim, does that classification have with regard to the Kusi? Om Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Levatel Rishus Velitain Rishus. The idea of abandoning and transferring ownership of his property. Uchidisanya. And this information is contained in the following Tanaic source. Number one, Yisrael Mumar, Meshamer Shabbat Abashuk, a Jewish person who is a sinner, but he observes the Shabbos in a public fashion. In other words, he is the kind of person that may, let us say, drive to shul, but he parks his car several blocks away. In other words, he doesn't want to be seen in his acts of Shabbos violation. Such a person is mevatel rishus venosin rishus in the event that he was a member of a chotzer and forgot to contribute to the joint holding of food. He is able to mevatel rishus and nosein rishus, to avoid his ownership and transfer his ownership to the other members of the chotzer. Number two, a second situation is v'she'eno mishaber shabato b'hashuk. A Jew who openly violates Shabbos in public, eno mevatel rishus v'nosein rishus. He, if he did not contribute to the chotzer, we're not going to rely on his simple declaration of being mevatel rishus. Mipnei she'amru, Yisrael nosein rishus u'mevatel rishus. A Jew has this option. This is what we'll call a lenient solution to the problem. Uba'ove kochavim, but when it comes to a Gentile, and it comes to an idol worshiper, anshi yiskor. So what the Bryce is so far is telling us is that someone who is a public Sabbath violator, he, with regard to this halacha, is viewed as a Gentile. Ketzad, so what is to be done? Omar lo rishusi kenuyoloch, rishusi mivutelas loch. This is an example of mevatel rishus. How is that accomplished? By someone saying, but my possession, my rishus, my ownership in this courtyard is kenuyoloch, is now owned by you, or rishusi mivuteles loch, or I am mevatel, I am abandoning or voiding my ownership to you. Kona, that is binding the eno tzorech lizkos, and you don't have to do any further kinyan chalip and any further legal gesture. That, of course, is a description of what a Yisrael would do if he forgot to contribute to the chotz eruv chatzeros. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form. You notice a bowtie form. Under our Mivneh heading, in the outside margin, we have a bowtie featured, and they are Shnei Maisim Nosafim, two additional incidents, stories, Hameshutaf Lahem. The common denominator between these upcoming stories is She'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takola Al Yedei Tzadikim. The Kodesh Baruch Hu will not allow the righteous to stumble in the area of eating forbidden food. Hesper, the explanation that we're giving to this marking is based on what one can see in Rashi in the Dibur HaMasel LePunduk, which is found toward the lower section of the narrow lines, and also the Rashi that appears on Amud Beis in Dibur HaMasel Heyed Rabbi Yeshua. Turning to the Gemara, Rabbi Zera v'Rabbi Asi Iklu'u LePunduk de Yoi. Yoi is the name of the place. A punduk is an inn. So Rabbi Zera and Rabbi Asi arrived at this inn or motel of Yoi. Rashi adds importantly that the innkeepers were Amoratzim. They were people that were not knowledgeable in halacha, and as a result, they were suspect on non-cooperation with regard to tithing. There, this creates a situation of that the produce one gets from them is classified as demai. Demai is produce that I'm not sure whether the owner took or removed the tithes, the miser tithe. So these two rabbis arrive at the inn of Yoi. Aisu the Kamayu Beitzim Hametsumokois Biyayin. They were served a dish which was some type of roasted egg that it was roasted so much that it became quite shriveled up. That's a Beitzim Mitsumokis. And after they were roasted, they were then mixed together with wine. Wine, as you may very well know, is a food item from which tithes would have had to be removed. So they were served this dish. Rabbi Zera lo ochal, Rav Asi ochal. Rabbi Zera did not eat from it. Rav Asi did. Omer lei Rabbi Zera lo Rav Asi. Rabbi Zera asks Rav Asi v'lo chayish mor le taruvas demai. Are you not concerned with the problem of the mixing of demai into this dish? The dish was made of eggs and wine. The eggs themselves, obviously, it's not produce. It's not something that grows, and as a result, it doesn't need any tithing. But the wine portion of this dish does require tithing. This is a ta'aruvas, a mixture involving a mixed food item in which there is demai. This is, of course, in contrast with someone served a bowl of fruits. That's not a taruvas mai. That's pure demai, so to speak. That's a where the entire substance is something that needs to be tithed. Here you have a taruvas demai. Omale, Rav Asi, upon hearing Rabbi Zera's words of caution, says, "Lavadatoy." It didn't occur to me. So, on the very surface, it appears that Rav Asi slipped up. In other words, he ate from something that he should not have eaten from. Omar Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera thinks to himself and says, "This doesn't make sense. Efsher, could it be Gosru al Taruvas Demai that there would have been a legal prohibition of eating demai in a mixed form, umestaya milsa de Rabbi Asi lemechal isura, and fate would have it that Rav Asi would slip up and eat something that is forbidden? That is so unlikely, reasons Rabbi Zera. Hashta behemten shel tzadikin, ein hakodesh baruch hu mevi takola al yodon. We know that even the animals of the righteous, the Almighty prevents them from stumbling, from eating something that they should not be eating. Tzadikim atzman lo kol shekein, the pious themselves. We're not talking anymore about the animals owned by the righteous, but the righteous themselves, all the more so, should be deserving of heavenly intervention, preventing them from eating food items that are prohibited. So that Rabbi Zera, in looking at this story, though Rabbi Zera himself didn't eat from it, it bothered Rabbi Zera that Rav Asi could have possibly slipped up. Nofak Rabbi Zera Dok the Ashkach. Rabbi Zera went and researched and investigated and found that in fact when it comes to Taruvas Demai, no prohibition applies to it. We might just say by way of background that Demai is an Isur Derabonan. It's a rule that involves a rabbinic prohibition where in reality the majority of Amoratsim did tithe their produce. A minority, although it was a significant minority, they did not. The Rabbonin imposed an extra level of precaution that says that if you have Demai, if you acquire fruits from Amoratsim, then you have to tithe it yourself. You can't rely on them. However, that prohibition doesn't go so far as to include a situation where the produce requiring tithing is mixed in with other non-produce food items. Desanya, halokeach yayin losei sesoch amuryas. If one buys wine, and we're talking here about buying from Amoratsim, if one buys wine for the purpose of preparing murias. Murias is a dish in which wine is added. O, the socha alontis, or one buys wine for adding to the alontis preparation. Alontis also is something into which wine is mixed. Or, karshinin, one buys karshinin, la'asos mehem tchinin, to make a dish called tchinin. Or, one buys adoshim, sometimes translated as lentils, lasos mehen resisin, to make a resisin dish. These are names of different types of food items. In each one of these cases, we have noted the item that's purchased. We've underlined these items, the wine, or the karshinim, or adoshim, any of those are items that grow, or and hence need to be tithed. Chayav mishum demai. Those items that you bought in order to make these food items at home, you want to make murya, salontis, tchinin, or resisin, so you'll have to tithe the wine or karshinim or adoshim that you bought. You bought the item in its pure form. The ein tzorach lomar mishum vadai, and it doesn't need to be told if that you'll have to tithe it if the owner himself said he did not tithe it. Vadai means certainly untithed. However, the hein atzmon, if you bought the ready-made food items from the Amoretz, mutarin, they are allowed without any need to tithe, b'tnei shehein taruves, because the items that would have needed to be tithed are mixed in. They're not in their pure form. So with this in mind, we can see how Rabbi Zera didn't slip up at all. The Gemara now asks, "Velo gazru al taruvas demai?" The Gemara now brings into question this whole, we'll call, defense that we cited on behalf of Rav Asi, and asks, is it so that there was no prohibition concerning demai mixed when mixed in? When I say prohibition, what we really mean to say is that there would be a need to tithe even in a case where the demai is in a mixed form. The Hotanya, we have the following source: Hanosein l'shchenoso iso le'efois ukedero levasheel. If a person gives to his neighbor some dough to bake, and he gives together with the dough, he gives sour. Sour is sourdough, which causes the rest of the batter to rise. And a case, he gives to his neighbor a kedera, that's a pot of food to cook up, and he gives along with the pot of food, he gives spices as well. Eino choshesh l'sa'or v'tavlin sheba. One does not have to worry about the sourdough or the spices that he gave. In other words, that which he gave to the neighbor to prepare the neighbor used that which he gave them. And we're talking, of course, about a person who is knowledgeable and trustworthy who gave it over to the neighbor. The neighbor, it's very important to note, is an am haaretz, someone who is themselves not so reliable with regard to their own produce. Nevertheless, I gave them tithed produce, or I gave them non-Shemitah year produce, and hence the source goes on to say, I don't have to worry, lo mishum shvius, v'lo mishum meiser. I don't have to worry that maybe something was switched around. In other words, that which I gave them, I am getting back. Rashi points out, I'm not choshesh because of a switch around, and that they took mine and replaced it with theirs, because they are not suspect on theft. However, v'im omar law, if the owner gave to the neighbor and said to her, asi li mishalichi, make me this dish from your own produce, then choshesh la'sor v'tavlin sheba, then you have to worry about the sourdough and the spices that are in there, mishum shvius u'mishum meiser. Maybe the neighbor might have used shvius produce, and shvius is produce from the seventh year, let us say after the Zman of Bior. There are certain points at which produce of the seventh year becomes forbidden. So if you told the neighbor, make it from your mishalichi, from your own, make for me this dish using your own stuff, then you will have to worry about shvius and meiser and the lack of tithing. We've dashed underlined where it says umishum meiser. What we see here is that there seems to be a need to choshesh. We're saying that you'll have to mafrish, you'll have to do a tithing from the dish that you get from them, once they, or the baked goods that they bake for you, even though it's part of the problematic food substance is in a mixed form. This is a kasha on what we said just before, that when demai is in a taroves, you don't have to worry. The Gemara answers, shiny hasam, that case is different. The kevan de ka'omar law, since you told them, and we should point out this is the first of two answers, that's why there's a little one over the expression shiny hasam. The kevan de ka'omar law, since I told the neighbor, asi li mishalichi, make the dish from your own produce, from your own substances, keman de oriv biodayim domi. It's as if they were mixed in directly. What that means is it's as if you took from them the substances separately and then mixed them in. Since that's the case, you're really dealing with the items, the demai-worthy items, in a separate form. And we said before that if you acquire from the Am Haaretz the items in a pure form, of course you have to separate based on the rules of demai. So since you instructed the neighbor to make it, and they acted on your word, they did your shlichus, therefore the items are said to be in your possession already in a separate state prior to their being mixed in, and that's what necessitates the need for being mafrish the meiser. That is different from the case of Rav Asi, who was served a dish that was prepared beforehand, before Rav Asi had any involvement with the matter, and simply served the demai in a state of taroves. Rafram, this is a second approach, why here it's different than the case involving Rav Asi. Rafram Omar Shaini Sa'or V'Tavlin, the issue of sourdough and spices is different. Dilataimo Ovid V'Taimo Lobotil, these items create the taste, the special taste of the food, and the spicing up of the food, and spicy taste doesn't become void, which is different than a case of, let's say, something in a simple mixed form where it does become batel. So since we're talking here about in this Tanaic source where he said asilim shalichi, that you have to tithe even though in a mixed state, we're talking about the items that were demai worthy were spicy items, and as such spice, because it's always perceptible, it does not become voided. Before, we had mentioned that if I give to the neighbor all of the ingredients, then I don't have to worry that they may have switched around with their own ingredients and gave me a prepared dish using their own foodstuffs. And that's why it said in the source, Eino Choshesh. Once again, where I gave them all of the ingredients, I don't have to worry about anything. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, opposite the line we are holding by right now, and you can align that or parallel it with the line above, and that leads us into the following question. Ulechlufi lo chai shinan. Is it so that halacha does not suspect a switch around from taking place? Before going on in the Gemara, we also have triangles, and we'll take advantage of what we have noted on the outside margin. We have a topic heading, Nose, followed by a Mivne, a structural note. The Nose reads, L'chlufi, means switching around, Michael Mesukon, L'Michael She'eno Mesukon. The switching around of Mesukon means tithed. The issue of a switch around concerning someone replacing tithed food with untithed food. So, lo chayshinon. That's what the rule was, that the chlufi lo chayshinon. The mivneh heading, the structural note, which features the triangles, these are three nisyonos, three attempts, lahakshos al high klal, to ask on that principle. As the Gemara goes on, we will also notice a double underlining that signifies in this sukya responses or answers to these questions. So the Gemara asks, "Ulechlufi lo chayshinon? Is it so that we don't worry about a switch around?" For Hotnan, we have the following Tanaic source: Hanoisein lechamoso, someone who gave food, he gave dough to his mother-in-law to bake. Me'aser es shehu nosein law, he has to tithe that which he gives to her. Ve'es shehu notel mimeno, and that which you get from her, you also have to tithe. We're talking obviously about a mother-in-law that herself is not someone that is trustworthy with regard to tithing. So you are expected to tithe that which you give to her and that which you get back from her. Mipnei shechashudo machlefes hameskalkel, because she is suspect on switching around that which may have gone bad. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, says Mipnei shechashudo machlefes hameskalkel imiskalkel alechem, if the dough that you gave her to bake went bad. Maybe the bread didn't rise properly, the loaves didn't come out of the oven in a nice way. Machlifoso, she will switch them around. Hilkoch, me'aser es shehu nosein law, you have to be sure to tithe that which you give her to prepare. The michlifo lay, if she switches it around, shalei hei chovers enosein lefoneu michshol. Since she's not going to tithe, she will end up eating that which you gave her, because she'll exchange it for her better stuff that she's giving you. In the meantime, that which you gave her, she will take and eat. So to make sure she doesn't stumble eating untithed produce, be careful to tithe beforehand that which you give her to prepare. That which you get from her, naturally, will need to be tithed. What do we see from all of this? We see that there is a suspicion of people switching around. The Gemara answers, that doesn't cast any shadow on our rule. Hasam, that case involving mother-in-law is different. Kidiktoni taimo, as the reason that's given for that case. And here it is. Amar Yehuda, roitzehi betakonas bita uboisha mechasona. A mother-in-law, a man's mother-in-law, is an individual that's very concerned that that things go really good for her daughter, and she's embarrassed when it comes to her son-in-law. So that if he gave her dough to bake, she wants to make sure that that which her son-in-law gets back are nice loaves. And therefore, she has a motivation to switch around. She has a vested interest. However, a stranger, someone's simple neighbor, where you don't have this level of vested interest, there is no suspicion of switching around. The Gemara asks, Ula alma lo chayshinon, and in general, there is no chashash of switch around. Namely, in cases other than mother-in-law, there is no suspicion. But we see there. We'll see from the following case there is. V'hotnan, hanosein lepundikis shelo, someone who gives to his innkeeper food to prepare for him. Me'aser es shu nosein lo, just like we saw with the mother-in-law, if he gave the pundikis some dough to bake, so he has to mafrish that which he gives to her, the es shu notel hemena, and that which he takes back from her after she prepares it. Mitnei shechashuda umachlefes, because there is this suspicion of switching around. Once again, we see a case that doesn't involve mother-in-law. This is the puntikis is a stranger, so to speak, and nevertheless, the chashad of switch around does exist. The Gemara answers, there too, there are unique circumstances. Hosam nami, there too, moire v'omra, she rationalizes and says, bar be rav lecho chamimo, v'ano echo kariro. Bar be rav is the student of Torah, the Talmud Chacham, who is featured in that case visiting the inn. She, the innkeeper, has a respect for Torah scholars and wants him to eat the fresh stuff, the best stuff. So she will give him, if necessary, she will give him the warm, fresh stuff, which is stuff that she just prepared, and switch it around with the food that the foodstuffs that he had given her, which is karira, which is cold, it's not as fresh. So once again, as we answered before, in a situation where there's a special either vested interest or specific point of rationale that would motivate switching around, there we do have to be suspicious. But in general, as to allow an automatic suspicion of switch around taking place, that we do not say. The Gemara asks, Ulechlufi lo chayshinon, is it so that we don't concern ourselves with the possibility of someone switching around? The Hotanya. And we raise a third question. And you can see this question is of some length, so we've employed a long question marking that you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. All of these lines form the question. The Hotanya. We have the following source. Eishes Chover Tochenes im Eishes Amoretz Bizman Shehi Temea. The Eishes Chover is a woman who's literally she's the wife of someone who is Torah knowledgeable. But we'll, for the sake of brevity, simply refer to her as someone who is observant with regard to halachas concerning kashrus. She is grinding together with an amoretz. This is a person who, the Eishes Amoretz, she is someone that is not knowledgeable and concerned with issues of tithing of food. So it says here that the Eishes Chover can help the Eishes Amoretz preparing the flour at a time that she, the Eishes Chover, is Temea. Tameah is a state of ritual impurity. When a person is in a state of ritual impurity, they are careful as to what they touch. They don't behave in a simple impulsive fashion. Because they know that when they're in a state of ritual impurity, if they whatever they touch can become rendered tome, rendered impure, and that has certain ramifications. So since she's Tamea, she is not accustomed to touching that which she is dealing with, and as a result of that, she is probably going to stand at some distance from the food items that she's working on. Therefore, we're not worried that she will eat from the food of the Am HaAretz. However, Aval Loi Bizman Shehi Tahora, we don't want her to work alongside the Eishes Am HaAretz when the Eishes Chover is herself in a state of ritual purity, because then she lowers her guard, so to speak, and touches and eats whatever is within hand's reach. If she's hungry, we're worried she might just take something and eat it. She'll forget herself, and she'll end up eating the produce of the Eishes Am HaAretz, which carries with it the suspicion of something untithed. Rav Shimon ben Elozer Omer, af bizman she tameya lo tidchon. Even in a state where the Eishes Am HaAretz is ritually impure, she should not help the Eishes Am HaAretz with the grinding. Ah, but we said the Eishes Chover will keep a distance she'll keep her distance when she's Tameya. Nevertheless, there's still what to worry about. Because the Eishes Am HaAretz will give to her, she'll hand to her food, and she will, as a result of being served the food, she will eat it. The food that we're talking about, the items being ground, are food that are owned by her husband. The wife has a right to eat, of course, whatever she wants for her own purposes. That's part of the marriage agreement. But she doesn't have a right to distribute her husband's produce to her friends. And we see in this Tanaic source that Rav Shimon Elozer mentions that the Eishes Chover should not work alongside the Eishes Am HaAretz even when she is Tameya. Why? Because there is a suspicion that the Eishes Am HaAretz will give the Eishes Chover food. And the Gemara now points out, Hashta Migzal Gozla. Now we see she's even suspect of outright theft. When it comes to suspicion of something that's, we'll call it, less serious on a financial level, namely switching around, certainly people would be suspect. So here we have a case not involving mother-in-law, not involving innkeeper, and yet we see that there certainly is grounds for suspecting food switch around. To review the last point, if one is suspect on outright stealing, certainly they would be suspect on switching things around. Omar of Yosef, Hosanami. Once again, we have an answer that addresses this case specifically, and hence it does not cast any shadow on the general rule of Lichlufi Lo Chayshinon. Here it's different. Hosanami. Murid Amra, the Eishes Am HaAretz rationalizes and says, Tura midishe ko'ochil. This is an expression, if we translate it literally, it comes out, an ox eats from that which it threshes. The application of that is, since she's helping me in the grinding, that which I give her is not an act of outright theft. I'm simply giving someone who's helping me to prepare the grains. I'm giving them a meal. So since there's this, we'll call it this point of rationalizing, we wouldn't look at the Eishes Am HaAretz in this case as a thief. And as a result of that, we can't say that from here you can conclude if they're suspect on thievery, they certainly would switch things around, because we don't have a case here of someone who in their own eyes is practicing real thievery. As we mentioned quite a bit earlier regarding this geometric form, this is the bow tie form. This was explained on Omer Aleph as being a couple of stories, meisim, that the common denominator between them has to do with a righteous individual seemingly stumbling and eating something of a forbidden nature. This incident actually takes quite a bit of time to develop, with all of the details and the Gemara's series of questions and investigation points that accompany it. This goes down quite a bit down Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. We have a vertical dashed line that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, in which we've written Maisa Beis Shan, the story involving the community of Beis Shan, which reference to Beis Shan will become quite clear when we learn the Gemara itself. But we want to emphasize, as far as the general structure is concerned, the issue of eating something that one should not eat, or stumbling and eating something one should not eat. That will not be featured in the Gemara that's part of today's shiur. That will be featured toward the end of this Maisa. But we have to justify our use of this bow tie marking already at this point, because we won't necessarily see the direct tie-in until we get to the Gemara on Daf Zayin. So the second story is also introduced by a topic heading in the outside margin. Rabbi Meir Ochal the Beis Shan. Rabbi Meir ate produce in the community of Beis Shan, which is located in the northern part of Israel. Velo hifrish trumas amaisers. He ate without tithing. Rebbe hitir es Beis Shan. Another point that we will see in this Gemara is that Rebbe declared Beis Shan as a place whose produce does not need to be tithed. And another point that will come up is mokom hanichu liavoisan is gather bo. The question will be posed or raised against Rebbe. How can Rebbe issue a legal ruling, something that his predecessors did not issue? So the phrase of mokom hanichu liavoisan is gather bo will surface at that point in the discussion. That point, we can say already ahead of time, suggests a very, very interesting idea, that in the course of halachic development, there are situations that earlier generations may leave things, let's say, without ruling, areas that they do not rule upon or do not issue edicts concerning them, and only later generations come along and do it. It's a form of, you can say, it's a situation where the earlier generations leave room for later generations to act upon matters in a legal fashion, thereby gaining their own fame and significance. These ideas, if they appear to be a bit abstract right now, will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara. Hayid Rebbe Yoshua ben Zirus, ben Chomiv shel Rebbe Meir lifnei Rebbe, al Rebbe Meir. A lot of names that we just saw over here. So we have Rebbe Yoshua ben Zirus. He was the son of Rebbe Meir's father-in-law. Maybe we could describe him as Rebbe Meir's brother-in-law. Rebbe Yoshua testified in the presence of Rebbe. Rebbe is Rebbe Yudah Nossi. He told Rebbe concerning his brother-in-law. He mentioned concerning Rebbe Meir, She'ochal ola shel yerek bebeis shan, that he ate a leaf of a vegetable in Beis Shan. Beis Shan is a community, as we mentioned before, in the northern part of Israel, and he ate it without tithing from it. Upon hearing this, Rebbe then vehitir Rebbe as Beis Shan Kula al Yodo. Al Yodo means through this testimony concerning Rebbe Meir's eating behavior, eating without tithing. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi then ruled that Beis Shan, the whole Beis Shan, that whole town, is an area that does not need to have its produce tithed. On a very superficial level, before seeing the details later in the Gemara, it would almost sound as if he was declaring Beis Shan as not part of Eretz Yisrael, not part of the land of Israel. If that were the truth, that it were not part of the land of Israel, then tithing is not necessary. Chibru alav echov ubeis aviv, literally the brothers, could be the colleagues of Rebbe and his family, beis aviv, the members of his father's household, gathered together and we'll say ganged up on Rebbe and said, Omru lo, they said to him, Mokom shavosecha vavosavosecha nogabu iser, a place, in this case, Beis Shan, a place that your forebearers and your forebearers' forebearers treated with restriction, namely, tithed the produce from Beis Shan, ato tino bo heter, are you coming along and all of a sudden declaring it as allowed? Well, that's certainly putting Rebbe on the spot. How does he respond? So we have a long marking that we call a point over here. He responds citing a pasuk which refers to an incident in Jewish history where Chizkiyo HaMelech, King Chizkiyo, ground up the snake, the copper snake image form that Moshe Rabbeinu had made. Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah made an image of a snake that was designed to, upon being viewed, helped to stop a magefa, a plague that was brought upon the Jewish people in their travels in the Midbar. So Moshe Rabbeinu had made this snake image, and many years later Chizkiyo HaMelech came and destroyed it. It just so happens that in the course of between the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and Chizkiyo HaMelech, this snake image was misconstrued as an idol, and people were worshipping it. Eventually Chizkiyo HaMelech wanted to put a stop to that, and he smashed this snake. He ground it up. This is by way of introduction to Rebbe's response. We want to point out that Rebbe's response, it takes quite a while to develop, hence we've called it a long point. This also has, in this case, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, we have a nun representing nekuda, a point, with a descending vertical dashed line, which you can see if you have the next omid available, Daf Zayin, in front of you. Can scroll ahead and see that it lasts down a number of lines down from the top of Zayin Omid Aleph. So in order to appreciate Rebbe's point, we have to learn all of this Gemara. So upon Rebbe being challenged by his family, how is it that Rebbe can issue something that is contrary to the ways of his forebearers? Dorash Lahen Mikrozeh. He expounded on the following pasuk, and this pasuk features King Chizkiyo, who was in the latter part of the first Beis Hamikdash period. And it says, "Vikitas Nechasha Nechoshes Asher Oso Moshe." He ground up the copper snake image that Moshe Rabbeinu had made. Ki ad hayomim ohemo hoyibnei Yisrael mekachrim lo vayikro loy nechoshdan. Until his time, the Jewish people were offering sacrifices to it and called it Nechushtan. What we see is that a practice of idolatry grew up, arose around this particular image. But what's puzzling is, how is it that so many years would go by And in the course of time, there were other pious leaders, other pious kings, who did nothing about it. And it waited until Chizkiyahu HaMelech's time. Efshir bo Asa v'lo biyaro. Bo Yehoshaphat v'lo biyaro. Could it be that King Asa and King Yehoshaphat, who were pious people, who were responsible for eradicating a great deal of idolatry, that they could have come and gone, and not destroyed this thing? All of the idols that were around Asa and Yehoshaphat destroyed. So how do you explain their leaving this Nechash HaNechoshes around? They left something for the future generations to gain fame. Rashi explains the word lehisgader is lehisgadel. It's hard to say that they deliberately left it around for the purpose of a later generation having something to act upon, but that's the way things worked out. The Tosfos explains on the lower part, at the end of the narrow lines of the Tosfos column in the Dibur Maschil Elah, Tosfos says that regarding the Nechash HaNechoshes, since it was made originally in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was made through divine command, they, the earlier generations, had thought erroneously that it's forbidden to destroy it. Therefore, they restrained themselves from destroying that particular snake image, thereby leaving room for the later generation, Chizkiyahu, to act. So, Rebbe, in citing this story involving the Nechash HaNechoshes, he now comments about himself. Af ani, so too regarding me. Mokum hanichulu li avosai lizgader bo. The few earlier generations that did not openly rule on Beis Shan as being allowed, being its produce being allowed without tithes, they left room for me to issue that ruling. Mikan, from here, meaning from this incident where we see that Rebbe accepted the testimony concerning Rebbe Meir's behavior and learned from it, even though on the surface it seemed to be something strange. It seems something strange because up till that point everyone was behaving differently. They were treating it with restriction. We learn from this. Mikan, l'talmud chocham shamar dvar halacha. If a Talmud Chacham issues a legal ruling that seems to be a chiddush, something that no one else heard, nevertheless, one should not have an immediate reaction of rejection. The Gemara now has three expressions with words that actually seem similar to one another, but the general spirit behind these three different words that we will see all reflect this idea that one should not have an immediate action of reaction of rejection. Just like we see that Rebbe, upon hearing the somewhat strange behavior of Rebbe Meir, he didn't reject it and actually used this story to act upon and issue his legal ruling. So let's read this again. Mikan the Talmud Chacham Shomer Dvar Halacha, a Talmud Chacham that says a Dvar Halacha. And we're adding that's somewhat strange. She'ein mazichin oisoi. That one should not mazichin. That means Rashi says ein mazichin, ein mavdilin oisoi mishmuaso lomar chazor b'chol. Don't try to get the Talmud Chacham to retract. Don't immediately say, hey, you should back off of that. The Amri law, another version, is ein mazichin oisoi. Rashi says, "Mazchichin" is an expression that has to do But let's go back. We skipped one of these expressions. The first one was ein mazichin oso. As we said, you don't try to separate him from his ruling. The amri lo ein maznichin oso. The word maznichin, Rashi says mishaksin es devarav. You don't deprecate his words. The amri lo, a third approach is ein mazichin oso. Don't say to him that which caused you to say this strange ruling is your haughtiness. Zichua Hadas has to do with someone who's haughty. And someone who's haughty in general is someone that doesn't pay close attention to what his Rav is teaching. Often people who are haughty feel that they know it all and don't have to absorb from their teachers. At this point, the Gemara goes over the three expressions and shows the basis for each one of these words. Ma domar mazichin, the one that says that we don't try to remove him from that which he said. Kirchtiv, like the Pasuk says, with regard to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, it says, velo yizach ha-choshen, that the choshen should not be removed from the clothing that to which it is attached. So you see, lo yizach has to do with removal. Uman diomar ein maznichin, dichtiv ki lo yiznach le'olam Hashem. Maznichin has to do with deprecating, and that's the idea in this pasuk. Ki lo yiznach le'olam Hashem. One should never deprecate the words of the Almighty. The ki lo yiznach le'olam Hashem, where Hashem does not, we say, does not push away or deprecate. Uman de Omar mazichichin, desnan, misherobu zechuche halev, rovu machlokes b'Yisrael. Zechuche halev is a reference to those who are haughty. So when the haughty included, their increased controversy in Israel. Controversy is a function of something being unclear. People, as we said before, who are unclear, who are haughty, don't concentrate enough as to what they are being taught by higher authorities, and hence they come out with erroneous conclusions, and that is responsible for increased controversy. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.